This is the Oanda Podcast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, where we preview and review all the big business and market stories from around the world with Oanda senior market analysts from across the globe. And today it is Craig Earlham in London. Good afternoon, Craig.
Good afternoon.
Let's start with the markets. Comments from Jay Powell earlier in the week still having an effect on the markets. They're a bit edgy, and it's all about higher bond yields.
Yeah, I mean, the bond yields have been rising prior to the actual address, which is why it was so important. The appearance before the Senate Banking Committee on Tuesday and then the House Financial Services Committee on Wednesday, semi-annual monetary policy report, all eyes were on that. It was, can Jerome Powell appease the markets? Can he be dovish enough to get them back on board and suppress those bond yields once again? And the answer is no. Temporarily, it was a yes. He said something on Wednesday which seemed to just soothe investors a little bit, but it's just bounced straight back. And we look today and we're still seeing the acceleration in bond yields. We're seeing stock markets selling off. The US is not too bad. We're seeing it's a bit of a heavier sell-off in Europe. But this is not just a US yield story. We're seeing yields across the board actually rising and accelerating. And I think that's the concern here, is this anticipation that we could potentially see higher inflation, which effectively forces policymakers' hands. Jerome Powell was as dovish as he can be. He talked about how he thinks that they have the tools if necessary. They don't think there's going to be inflation. They don't think there's going to be permanent inflation. And that they're in no rush to be tightening monetary policy at all. But investors either just don't buy it, or they think that he's underestimating the problem at hand. And it's going to be really interesting to see what it takes to actually calm this down, whether it is going to take actual action from the Federal Reserve, or enough talk can get it over the line, or if time will just pass and the markets will start to settle down again. But right now there are jitters. We're not in full taper tantrum mode by any stretch of the imagination, but there's certainly plenty of jitters in the markets right now.
Markets rose yesterday, though, didn't they, after Jerome Powell wrapped up his testimony by assuring the markets that interest rates would remain low for longer, but they're suffering the reverse today. Why was that?
Well, it's just simply because the markets aren't buying into it effectively. We look at where yields are, and this isn't just in the US. We're seeing yields rising in the US, the UK, Germany, France, Italy. We're seeing them rise all over the place. So this isn't just a US-centric thing. So Jerome Powell can say all these things, but if investors think that inflation is going to rise anyway and that the central banks are underestimating it, or the Fed is underestimating it, and think they'll be forced to act whether they want to or not later in the year, then the words kind of fall on deaf ears. Whether it is that extreme or whether this is a number of factors really filtering into this. One is the kind of lack of understanding about what's to come, and the kind of fears about what could be, and then it becomes a little self-fulfilling when you start to see the markets moving and more people talk about it, and it kind of feeds into that. Or whether it's whether this is just a sign of the frothiness that's in the markets. There's been a lot of talk at the moment about the fact that these markets are frothy. We're seeing it about equity markets. We're obviously seeing a lot of speculation. We saw the return of GameStop this week, rallied 100% on Wednesday, and then rallied another 100% overnight on Wednesday night in aftermarket hours. So we're seeing, and obviously there's still the talk of Bitcoin, which we were talking about last week, surging to new highs again. There's a lot of talk of frothiness in these markets, and maybe this yield spiking at a time we're talking about frothy markets, maybe this just all feeds into the kind of negativity that we see. And what we effectively see over a period of time is a bit of a pullback in the markets. People become a little bit happier and everything settles down again. Maybe it's going to be more. Maybe this does turn into a full taper tantrum. I think that's what's going to make next week so interesting, is because we're not in taper tantrum mode yet. But if this continues, then it's only going to exacerbate the kind of negativity that we see building up in the markets at the minute.
We'll talk about next week in a moment or two, because there is plenty going on. But you mentioned Bitcoin. Now, it hit its record high last weekend around the $60,000 mark, but it's not had a good week, has it?
No, it's so last weekend we heard from Elon Musk, just one of these off-the-cuff Twitter comments suggesting it is a little high, and all of a sudden everything started turning and we started seeing more and more of a sell-off. We've had more comments from people that the crypto crowd usually ignore, if I'm honest. So like Janet Yellen questioning its usability, questioning how efficient it is, and things like that. And that seems to have weighed on it as well, which is interesting because, like I say, these are comments which are normally ignored from the kind of mainstream. Elon Musk's Twitter feed can give it a kick in either direction, but usually the kind of established elite are the ones that tend to get quite ignored unless they're saying something positive. And that kind of sent it lower as well. And now you wonder whether the kind of overall risk mood in the markets is dragging a bit, because it is a risk asset. I mean, it's a highly, highly speculative risk asset. And therefore, if we're seeing markets falling more generally, then you would expect that that will take its toll on speculation as well. So it's maybe this is having an effect. And again, when we're talking frothy markets, there isn't anything frothier than Bitcoin, apart from maybe GameStop.
Indeed. Now, it promises to be a big week next week for Rishi Sunak, Chancellor of the Exchequer, of course, because he's already got his second budget. Wasn't long in the job last year. It seems like such a long time ago when the House of Commons was full to the brim, just 2 or 3 weeks, I think it was, before the lockdown. It's incredible to think how packed it was, and then within a few weeks, everybody was stuck at home. But this is a big moment for Rishi Sunak, isn't it? And former Prime Minister David Cameron has warned him this week that tax rises, quote unquote, wouldn't make any sense at all. He's compared the COVID crisis to a wartime situation. This is a rare intervention from a former Prime Minister, I have to say. He says he doesn't believe that taxes should be increased until the UK has fully emerged from the lockdown. It is that old word again, a big balance, isn't it? Balancing the public finances and making sure that businesses can prevail and can survive when they come out of lockdown. So he's got a tough job ahead in the next few days, ahead of that announcement on Wednesday.
Well, you could argue he's had the easiest job of any chancellor for a long time over the course of the last year, because he's been the chancellor giving everything away, furlough schemes and everything, and business rates relief, the type of things that chancellors would love to do, but have found it very difficult to do for quite some time. And now the hard work really begins. Obviously, he's had the good job, obviously, in the terrible circumstances. But this is where the hard decisions are now having to be made, because now we're coming out of it. You have to find a way to try and pay for the what we've been handed over the course of the last 12 months. And I don't think there's going to be an enormous amount of that in this particular budget, but it seems that there are going to be a few announcements. And I'm probably in agreement with David Cameron that it's probably not the time. You want to get through the recovery in 2022. It's probably going to be more feasible. But I think Sunak may want to just state his intention, and we may just see some kind of stealth tax hikes, so things that won't affect the vast, vast majority of people, and also lay out plans. The talk being that we're going to see corporation tax, for example, being increased over the course of the next 5 years, and that's an announcement we could get from the budget early next week. But I think apart from that, it is going to be mostly growth incentives again. It's going to be extension of the furlough scheme. We now have a path to exit the lockdown. Current furlough scheme runs to the end of April. So I think we're going to see an announcement on that to the end of June. Things like business rates, etc., support for businesses. I think all of this is going to be pushed back effectively to the end of June, and then maybe even some growth incentives as well. So I think there's going to be some tax hikes within this, but I think these are going to be hikes that are going to have minimal, if any, effect on the vast, vast majority of people at this stage. And it's probably going to be, as I say, kind of taxing by stealth. And apart from that, the corporation tax, I think, is the big one. And it is a bit risky, but we have to remember that we do have the lowest tax rate of of any of the major economies.
Yeah, 19%, isn't it?
Exactly. And yes, a rise to 25% would be quite punchy. But if the US raises their tax rate, it would still, I think, make us the most competitive. So we're not exactly talking anything overly extravagant. Obviously, though, it's not something that the Conservative Party in particular is going to back. And to be fair, even Keir Starmer has said this isn't the time for raising taxes. But even in best of times, this isn't something that the Conservative Party is going to necessarily get fully behind, the idea of raising taxes, especially in a post-Brexit Britain, when the prospect of lower taxes and competition was kind of one of the things that they saw as one of the opportunities that we had. So this may send the wrong message. But like I say, a lot has changed in the last 12 months, and the bill has to be paid somehow, or at least we have to start moving in that direction, unfortunately, because of the amount that this crisis has cost.
Don't think I can ever remember a situation where the Labour Party were against tax rises and the Conservatives, the government, were for it. This is a bit of a one-off, really. I mean, with the corporation tax, I suppose you could say, well, it's a tax on profits. It is a difficult call. I think 25%, that is punchy.
Yeah, and I think this is just one of the areas where the opportunity existed, because raising income taxes is a lot harder and a lot more politically sensitive. The argument, obviously, against corporation taxes, we need taxes to be low so that jobs can be created so that we can get back to full employment. But there's always an argument not to raise taxes on something and to cut instead. It's like I say, the real tough job for the Chancellor starts now, because he's got a very difficult job on his hand over the next 3 years.
Okay, very interesting to talk about this same time next week. We've also got the non-farm payroll figures from the United States next week as well. What do you think markets are expecting there?
So it's just a modest expectation, I think, to around 133,000 jobs. But what kind of makes this all the more important and all the more interesting is how the markets are trading right now. The fact that we're seeing, I think the Fed kind of sees it as the bond markets are reacting to growth. The bond markets are reacting to an acceleration in the economic recovery. The equity markets maybe suggest slightly otherwise, but what it means is that we're in a situation come next Friday where we could be talking about bad news being good news being bad news again. If we see a jobs report and it's 300,000 jobs created rather than 133, for example, are markets going to celebrate that, or are they going to see that as a sign that further more inflation, that the economy is going to be not just overheated, but it's going to be dramatically overheated? How will they respond to positive news? That's what makes next week's jobs report all the more interesting. Janet Yellen's already said that with the stimulus package that the Democrats are currently proposing, $1.9 trillion, that the US could be back to full employment next year. And if the economy performs even better in the short run, then the risk of the economy overheating becomes more feasible, at least. And that, like I say, we could just be back in one of these very strange situations where you've got the central bank calling it a recovery sign, and you've got the market saying it's an inflationary sign. And when the really good data appears, who's celebrating?
Indeed. And the other big story for next week we should look out for, OPEC. Are they going to turn the taps on again, or are they quite happy with the way things are at the moment?
So OPEC Plus meets next week, the plus being Russia and one or two others. The two key players, obviously, in all of this are still Russia and Saudi Arabia. Just to recap, at the meeting back in January, Saudi Arabia allowed small increases in production for Russia and Kazakhstan. I think it was 75,000 barrels. So very small in reality. But then to offset that, they actually cut 1 million barrels unilaterally themselves. And that really got markets on board. It sent oil prices rising again. And they agreed to do that until the end of March. So now we're talking about the meeting next week, and it's basically talking about April's production levels. So not only will Saudis have expired their commitment to reducing by 1 million barrels, but there's talk of the potential agreement for 500,000 barrels a day coming back across the group. So this would effectively be 1.5 million barrels. And even that may not get full backing from the group. There's going to be members who want to increase production quicker. Oil prices, Brent crude at $65 as we speak, has been higher in recent days. They're back at extremely healthy levels, and the economic recovery is expected to be even better than people were expecting. We're seeing the vaccine rollout has been a massive success. And the thing that countries like Russia and a few other producers may be wary of is that oil prices at these levels actually create an opportunity for US shale to start ramping up production. So you've got these combating forces that we've talked about before. Saudi Arabia wants higher prices. Russia wants to reduce the influence of US shale as much as possible. So while 1.5 million barrels coming back online seems obvious and seems like it's a win for all sides, I'm not sure it's going to be that simple. And I think that's why we're seeing some momentum drop out of the oil rally now, is because it's seen that the last couple of meetings have been difficult. They've lasted longer than anticipated. And in January, it was Saudi Arabia unilaterally acting to ensure that an agreement gets over the line. I'm not sure they were going to be willing to do so again. The question is, how do you then bridge the gap between what Russia wants and what Saudi Arabia wants and everything in between? So I think it's going to be a really interesting meeting.
Craig, thanks very much for joining us today. Have a very good weekend.
Thank you.